Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
This edition of the BBP, we promised you this. We promised you that we would do something that is unprecedented in BBP history. That's right, not one, but two parts to this week's podcast, because there's that much going on. It's just, it really is insane. I think at some point we are going to come up for air. I can see the light at the off-season tunnel. I can see it. It's right there, but we're not, Jim, we are not quite there yet.
No, we knew there was going to be some sort of fallout after this season. We didn't expect the kind that it turned into, we knew coaches were going to leave. I mean, that's just what happens, to have to spend the first part just sort of recapping, really an unbelievable end to the season, and now at the very start of the off season, just as busy. It's coaching changes and obviously now heading into free agency.
Yeah, so let's do that. Here's a little bit of what we're going to get to today to get you all set up. We're going to, of course, talk about Hugh Jackson heading to the Factory of Sadness, so he'll join the Cleveland Browns and try to be the latest in a long line to alter the path that franchise has been on, which, by the way, if you're not familiar with that path, that's called a downward spiral. It's been on that for a long time. We're going to get into some of the possible replacements, who those guys could be. Talk a little bit about Vance Joseph, Bengals defensive backs coach, who is now the defensive coordinator with the Miami Dolphins, as well as linebackers coach Matt Burke leaving to go with the Dolphins. And after that, we're going to get into all the free agents, and oh, there are no shortage of them. We've been talking for really over a year now about this class, and Marvin Lewis sort of blew it off a little bit in the post-mortem press conference at Paul Brown Stadium and saying that, oh, it's actually not as bad. And we'll get into this later, but he sort of in passing said, I just looked at it, and it's not as bad as I thought it would be. And it just kind of struck me that you just now looking at your free agent class, that you didn't know who was a free agent, but we'll get to that a little bit later, plus some great audio from some of the players that we were able to catch up with on move-out day, a very depressing, sad move-out, frustrated move-out day. So let's do this. Let's start with Hugh Jackson, an offensive coordinator. So, Jim, I'll open it up with this. I mean, we had this discussion in the media room on Monday. And it was Hugh wouldn't really take the Browns job, right? I mean, he wouldn't really go, being the hot candidate that he is. Everybody's interested in Hugh Jackson. The Browns clearly interested. You wouldn't really take Cleveland. I mean, anyone but Cleveland, right? It's sort of like the old anybody but Trump mantra that's going around. It's like anybody but Cleveland, right?
Right. Well, you are correct. This discussion was pretty heated. There were about five of us. And if I remember, only one of us was like, "Nah, he'll go to Cleveland if they offer him the job." I don't remember who that was.
Yes, you do.
Okay, yeah, it was me. I got to hold on to something now, because while I did win the season long game by game predictions, you did get the only one that matters correct, which was the playoff game. So now I got to hold on to saying, like, yes, Hugh wants to turn the Factory of Sadness into, you know, Pandora's ticklish box or something. So I am not surprised that he's in Cleveland, unlike, many others. But, I'm not surprised because I thought he would take it. I'm surprised that maybe he didn't interview well enough with the 49ers that maybe, you know, they were open to him swaying them away from Chip Kelly, or he was obviously nervous about not wowing the Giants that he felt he had to take it. So maybe that's what's surprising to me, Paul, is that, you know, he kind of just went for the very first offer. And I don't, you know, I don't know what that means about what he thought would happen next year with the Bengals coming back as an OC, or if he didn't think, you know, he'd get another offer. So that's a whole other thing that's kind of interesting about this.
Yeah, you're right. To me, maybe the most interesting thing to come out of this is, of course, we had our Hugh Whisperer, Mike Silver from NFL.com.
Right.
Knows all things Hugh. They've been close friends for a long time, and you don't need to follow him but for a couple of tweets to understand that. Who came out and sort of eventually, once all the announcement was made, had his first tweet out from Hugh, and then after that had a bunch of things that he tweeted out about the process, talking to different teams, fans that were interested into why things went wrong with them. But in the middle of that sort of just avalanche of, you know, I know Hugh better than you tweets, one that came out was about the Bengals, and it said something to the effect of, people don't realize how hard it really was for Hugh to leave, and that Marvin Lewis actually offered a plan where Hugh stays as coordinator and there's a succession plan to take over as head coach of the Bengals. That one got my attention.
Yeah, that was, I think you and I just started, maybe we talked right after that, or we were definitely trading text messages. I know our columnist, you know, Doc was similarly floored by that revelation. And you know, I know loyal listeners to the BBP know we're on it. You know, we're trying to figure out what that is, what that means, where it came from. But yeah, that, aside from Hugh going to Cleveland, that was, you know, clearly the, wait a minute, that means there's end in sight to Marvin Lewis potentially. And I don't think anybody thought of that. I mean, people outside, hey, should Marvin Lewis be fired? We've heard that chatter, but this is the first time sort of inside, right, Paul, that we've heard anything of Marvin acknowledging the end is near. You know what I mean? I definitely thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and not only that, him acknowledging it, but, you know, anytime you're in any job for what's going to be his 14th season next year, at a certain point you have to start thinking about, well, what's the end game in this? Well, where does this end up? And we just had not heard those words. We were also, I think we're all sort of under the assumption that Marvin Lewis is going to be head coach of the Bengals until, well, he decides not to, whenever that is. And that could go on for another 10 to 15 years. I mean, who knows?
Right.
As long as Mike Brown is there, I think he's more than comfortable with what Marvin Lewis is doing. But, I wonder what that succession plan was. And that's, you know, we're attempting to get to the bottom of some of this. I doubt that how much specifics will come out, I'm sure, but we'll work on that. But I wonder if it was, whenever I decide to leave, you'd be the head coach, whenever, in 2 years, in 1 year. I doubt it was in 1 year. Because if it were me, and I'm Hugh Jackson, and you tell me in 1 year, after being the offensive coordinator here again, I could take over this team and this franchise that doesn't ever get rid of coaches, to me, that would be a way better scenario than starting over in Cleveland. But, you know, who knows what those discussions really were, or how real they really were.
Right. And Paul, I totally agree with you on that. I cannot see Hugh Jackson sort of jumping to Cleveland, especially if he could have, you know, Andy Dalton and AJ Green and pretty much everyone on the offense aside from maybe Andrew Whitworth in 2017. You know, and of course there's Marvin Jones in that question, but you're right though. It seems sort of nebulous, you know, like, oh, maybe in a couple years I'll leave and then it's your gig. But at that point, you know, you're talking about key players in there, like trending into your 30s now, which is not where you want to be. And then also, you know, maybe this was an idea Marvin had runs up to Mike Brown in the front office and says, hey, write this into a contract. We need raises and blah, blah, blah. And you know, who knows, you know, I'm not putting this on the feet of the ownership, but that's a whole other level of discussion about,
right?
Because if you're Hugh Jackson, that needs to be in writing, gonna happen. If not, I'm out and I need X amount of dollars. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to just sort of that sort of tweet, you know, of like succession plan. I mean, for it to be done the right way for a guy who really clearly desperately wanted to be a head coach, it had to be soon and it had to be ironclad, in my opinion. You know, and I can't emphasize that enough. So it's my opinion on that. So it's interesting, but I don't know how like real that was, if that makes sense. There's just too much like stuff, I guess. Yeah. That would have had to happen for that to be like, and clearly because he's in Cleveland, right? I mean, that was the end result. He went to Cleveland anyway.
Yeah. And how about all the similarities in this? In Marvin Lewis was the guy that came to Cincinnati and pulled them out of epic futility. And we've often, as every time we've covered the two Bengals-Browns games that we covered this year and really for a number of years now, joked about how crazy it is how similar these Browns are to the 90s Bengals and just their ineptitude and just complete, you know, stumbling over yourself and making dumb mistakes and bad reputations and, you know, all that stuff. And for now, Hugh Jackson, who was here when Marvin Lewis took over and rebuilt this thing out of nothingness and has seen what he's turned it into. Now he goes into a franchise that is in at the very bottom and gets the opportunity to try to rebuild that culture and bring it back up and has a top pick to do so. Now, Carson Palmer is not out there. There is not a guy that is a clear, I can't say that I have done all my research on the draft. We're 1 week into the offseason, but I know that Carson Palmer doesn't exist in this draft. But if he can, you know, obviously kick Johnny Football to the curb and use that number two pick with a draft, how about that? He could go a guy who knows the division, knows the North, staying within it, just like Marvin Lewis did, going to a place that's been down for forever, getting a quarterback situation settled immediately, and then starting over. It's kind of eerie, and I guarantee you he's going to be following a very similar blueprint to the one Marvin Lewis did back in 2003.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. I mean, that's the key element to the Marvin Lewis era. I mean, right? Carson Palmer to start, and then the sort of second incarnation, the reboot with Andy Dalton.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's really only two quarterbacks, probably one guy he's, you know, Hugh Jackson's real familiar with, you know, Jared Goff out at Cal, and then yep. There's Memphis's, you know, Paxton Lynch. Paxton
Lynch.
I mean, those are really the only two QBs. But look, I mean, hey, if one of those guys is the guy, and look at what Andy Dalton did, and if you know, Hugh can develop one of those players, you know, or trade for AJ McCarron.
There you go. I was going to wait. Yeah. I was going to wait for you to finish. Or will it happen again? Will it happen again, Jim Ossarski? Will we really see? I mean, is it possible that Hugh Jackson's number one goal anytime he gets a head coaching job is to trade picks to the Bengals for a quarterback? Is it possible? I mean, let's be honest, though. And Paul Daugherty, you know, Doc had that in his TML, actually, like this week, talking about the Bengals should trade AJ McCarron. And there is a conversation throughout this offseason to be had about that, depending on what the market is. First of all, I would say trading him trades away someone who was pretty useful for you this year.
Right.
I understand that there's a good chance that he won't play next season, you hope, but that was certainly a very nice safety net to have. Now, that said, if you were going to tell me you could get a second round pick for AJ McCarron, I might be listening to that.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I'd do that in a heartbeat. Well, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I mean, you just took a fifth-round pick with a bum shoulder and turned him into a very competent NFL backup. I would take a second-rounder in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I agree with you on that, especially when you know you have your guy and you know that AJ McCarron is not going to come back here in 2 years, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
When his rookie deal is up, if Andy Dalton is still the quarterback, which is by all assumptions he would be, AJ McCarron is not going to come back to a place where he is not going to be the starter. So the question is, do you do it now, or maybe you do it next year? You get one more year of insurance out of AJ McCarron, and then you pull the trigger next offseason and try to see what you can get for him. I mean, his value, if he doesn't play next year, his value will stay the same. It might even go up just because he has another year of tutelage under his belt. And so, I mean, there's some to say that there isn't a chance that AJ McCarron could end up being the Cleveland Browns starting quarterback. I mean, it's not a crazy thing to say when you consider that Hugh Jackson is going to be looking wherever he can for a QB. And if he doesn't feel like he has one in the draft, he's going to go wherever he can to find one.
Well, right. And because Hugh, I mean, that's why the Carson Palmer trade was done in Oakland. I mean, it all starts with the quarterback. And honestly, it comes down to what he feels about the two QBs in the draft. Because look, no matter what Jimmy Haslam and Paul DePodesta and Sashi Brown, and I know Hugh, from what I understand, is going to be part of the process to hire his boss, kind of like what Lovie Smith did with Matt Light down Light down in Tampa, and we saw how that worked out for him in 2 years.
Yeah,
I mean, Hugh's got to win. You know what I mean? They may be promising him 4 or 5 years, and we're changing, but it's Cleveland, it's Jimmy. You know,
right?
You got to expect your butt's on the hot seat after going into that second year. So, you know, if he doesn't think one of those QBs can win, I guess then the real question is, did he really think AJ McCarron could win? Cause you know, you got to say the right things in the moment. I think
AJ McCarron proved he could win.
Yeah. So
don't you think?
I think, well, he was also around a very good team with a very good set of skill players that aren't really there up north. So
that's true.
That's
for now.
You know what I mean? So I that'll be very curious. That'll be very curious, you know, but also part of it too, you know, Mike Brown, obviously they're not gonna, you know, prevent Hugh from leaving for a head coaching job. I mean, we all know about Vance Joseph and that sort of getting blocked last year. That wasn't gonna happen for a head coaching job, but you know, Mike is Mike. You know, would he really trade a 20-something quarterback to the division rival? I mean, that's part of it too, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's something to put in the back of your head going forward for sure. Let's move off of Hugh Jackson himself and talk a little bit about possible replacements. Wrote this in the Inquirer this week, and the conversation was basically about the in-house candidates. Listen, there are a million different names out there that aren't in-house that could have a connection here. I mean, Marvin Lewis, typically with this type of stuff, stays pretty close to the vest. The last two coordinator hires were obvious. I mean, there was no debating that Hugh Jackson and Paul Gunther were groomed and right there in position to be the guys. It is not obvious this time. There is not that clear-cut you know, lineage that you can see that has been ready for this. I think everyone understood this was going to happen, which is why I believe that Marvin Lewis has had a plan the whole time and probably has one or two names that he knows he's going to go to that he has told, hey, if this happens, then I'm calling you. I wonder if they want to stay in-house or go outside. To me, and this is making a certain argument from my side, is all that the Bengals should care about at this point is continuing the upward ascension of Andy Dalton at all costs. They have the skill position players, the offensive linemen, all the rest of those players, great. They will figure out whatever is happening, okay? But the quarterback is such a specific thing, and Andy has done such a good job at mastering this playbook. I'm taken back to when we had Tyler Eifert on Beyond the Stripes before the playoff game, and he said, we were going through his touchdowns, and he talked about one in, I believe it was in Buffalo, Arizona, a back shoulder audible, and said, yeah, that actually was funny. That was a play that Andy just pulled out and audibled to from my rookie year under, it was in Jay Gruden's playbook. But because that playbook from Jay to Hugh stayed essentially the same, with Hugh obviously putting his own touches on it, but it's still the same foundation. Right. That's where Dalton is going back to. That's where he's tracing these things back to and can make these play calls. If you bring in somebody new and it's a whole new playbook, I just feel like it's such a massive step back. It's just a huge step back for your quarterback to have to learn all of that throw a whole new system at everybody when you have, and I don't know, but maybe if you don't have enough trust in any of the guys that are in-house, whether it's Ken Zampezi, the quarterback's coach, or James Urban, wide receivers coach. Those are your two most credentialed guys, really, best resumes you've got. I feel like it would be a step back if you went outside at this point.
Yeah, it's especially because of the ages and the career arc of a lot of guys. I mean, look, you know, it's one thing in New York, you know, when Eli Manning's won a couple Super Bowls and they're changing offenses. And I mean, that nothing has really been accomplished here. They really kind of took a huge leap forward to me offensively this season. And you're right. I mean, the thing about, you know, offenses, and coming from the NFC North in Chicago, where they kept rolling, burning through offensive coordinators and quarterback coaches for Jay Cutler. And you know, yes, he deserves some of the blame for his, you know, poor play, but look, offenses are complicated and they do take time. And that's one of the reasons why the best quarterbacks and the best offenses, there's a lot of continuity and consistency. Even if the faces change coordinator-wise, as you mentioned, Jay Gruden or Hugh Jackson, the offense, the concepts stay kind of the same. And then maybe you see some of that individual flair, you know, that obviously we've seen with Hugh Jackson. I think you're right. Ken Zampezi is interviewed for head, offensive coordinator jobs in Miami, in Chicago. He hasn't gotten those jobs. Yeah. There's reasons for that, right? Maybe he doesn't interview well, but that's not going to be an issue in Cincinnati.
No.
So, you know, that's a great, wow. I don't know. I mean, Hugh and Jay Gruden have run sort of interesting stuff, Paul. I don't know, you know, if there's a similar guy who uses the same language literally in that playbook that Marvin could go to. It just seems like Ken makes so much sense. And I guess I really would be surprised if it was, you know, just some other person. Unless he came in and they told us, I run the same stuff. The verbiage is the same with a little bit of tweaking. You know what I mean?
Why would you hire an offensive coordinator to come in and run your system, though? I mean,
right.
How many guys are really out there that know everything the Bengals have been doing?
Right.
Just don't know that is an option. I don't know. Maybe they feel like they have somebody that it is, but I don't know that that's something that you can just do. To me, it has to be someone that's been in here, that understands the personnel, that understands what they've been doing, and lets Andy Dalton kind of run his show. I mean, that to me, that's what this is now. This is Hugh is gone, and it's now up to Andy Dalton to be the one running the show. He was the one doing it anyway, you know, right, on the field. He has full reign to do whatever he wanted to. I think you keep it in his hands. Ken is an incredibly smart offensive mind who knows the quarterback as good as anybody. My only concern, and you know, we were listening to a little bit of, I was listening to Hugh Jackson's intro in Cleveland. He talked about when they were talking about what coordinator he wanted to hire for a position that was open, and he said, didn't talk about scheme, didn't talk about system. He's like, I just want, of course, the Hugh line, a leader of men. I just right, want a leader with tenacity, this, that, and the other. And yeah, that's great. Is that what that position should be about for the Bengals? Do they need somebody who, regardless of system, will be someone who keeps a foot directly to the rear of Andy Dalton?
Right.
Because that was clearly something that worked.
Right.
You know, that's Hugh Jackson's style, and you saw the difference in Dalton. Or is it just letting Dalton, he's kind of taken that step now and he needs to be who he is? I don't know. That's up for Marvin Lewis to say, and you got to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. He's got a pretty good track record on hiring coordinators right now.
Right. Yeah. And I think the in-house candidates, if you want to throw dark horse, you know, running back coach Kyle Kasky in there just as like the three guys, I guess, who have that sort of upward mobility desire, right. You know. None of those guys strike me as the, you know, the drill sergeant. And you know, they're personable. Some have bigger personalities than others, if you will. But none of them are like Hugh. And while you're never going to replace that, they're, you know, they kind of fall in line with Marvin. And Hugh was different than Marvin. I think Paul Gunther and from what I've heard of Zim, kind of different from Marvin in terms of their personality. But you're right, though. But, you know, if they promote Ken Zampezi and then you hire a new QB coach, maybe that's the guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is very, very interesting, especially when you're talking about a quarterback who had taken such an important big step in his career. QB shouldn't hire coaches, but this is, I find just an interesting circumstance, Paul, that I think Andy, not that he needs to have ideas or whatever, but like it really, really should be about Andy Dalton because you want to win a Super Bowl in the next 3 years, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you continue to only have a certain shelf life on some of these things, and this was
right.
This was one where the shelf clearly takes a little drop off after this one too. And so, right. One more thing I wanted to add on before we move on that was Jay Gruden and Hugh Jackson had very different personalities, but they both still worked with Andy Dalton. I don't know that it matters. I mean, like, what does it matter who they, you know, Tom Brady has seen a cycle of coordinators. These guys just keep coming through and Tom Brady plays well and they get jobs and it's all great. You know, I mean, at a certain point when you're a coordinator, you know when to get in and get out of the way and let your guy do what he can do. Now, the question is, will Dalton continue to do what he can do? But to me, that's why I think you just go with a guy who knows him. But who knows? We will see. We'll know soon enough. We keep it locked. Follow us on Twitter and Cincinnati.com, all that stuff. And we'll have all the updates and all that stuff comes out. I want to get touch on Vance Joseph and Matt Burke going to Miami. An underrated, huge move, I think, in not surprising at all. But it's like every bit of radio that I've done since then, people keep asking me about this stuff. And, oh, my gosh, we're losing the coach. This is why there was so much importance and urgency on this season. This is why we said that this is a big deal, because this is what's going to start happening. Vance Joseph's gone. He was such a key to the development of that secondary. And Matt Burke, linebacker's coach, goes with him. And so, and then Hugh Jackson now gone on offense, and there's going to be a gap to fill there. And you're not going to keep all these free agents we're going to get into in a second. You know, that's why you have to capitalize when you have everything. Because you can only keep these things together for so long in the NFL.
Right.
That's the way it works. When people see you have success, they want what's yours, and they're going to pull what's yours. And that's why when you have those times where you've got it all together, you got to win and you can't blow up. And, you know, that's why if you're a Bengals fan, you're getting sick thinking about it. But,
right.
Vance, don't you think this is an underrated thing here? I mean, I don't think people understand how big of a role Vance played in the development of this defense.
Well, exactly. Especially the development of three key free agents, three starters in that secondary. You know, Reggie Nelson obviously had a long career. You can argue he's gotten better. Adam Jones, without a doubt, has gotten better. And George Iloka has developed from a late round pick. And I know Vance hasn't been here their whole careers. I understand that. But you saw these guys really kind of take a leap forward in play productivity once Vance joined the staff. And this sort of transitions help, you know, could help transition to the next topic here, Paul, is George Iloka flat out said, I'm going to see where Vance Joseph goes, and I'm going to see if I can fit there with him, because he's that kind of guy that I want to play for. And he had no issue saying, I think I can speak to anybody in the secondary in terms of that. So, like, and it sort of transcended beyond football, too, in terms of how they felt about the man and what he meant to them as individuals. And, but you're right, though. I mean, here's a guy talking about draft and develop, right? That's a core principle of this team. And his short time in Cincinnati without a doubt, Vance Joseph has been a big part of the develop, right? And even with Dre Kirkpatrick and, you know, even Darquez Dennard said, he's like, look, you know, Vance came to my pro day. Like, you know, the guy helped me get better year one to two, and I'm going to miss him. And you're right, Paul. Definitely underrated. The position coaches, you know, you don't really know about them until they're head coaches when you Wikipedia, right? And you're like, where were they before?
Exactly.
Joseph's on that trajectory.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I mean, that was the case last year when he got blocked and could have gone to the Broncos and was the case for a while. So that, you know, I just think it looks like Kevin Coyle, who's just going to continue. They're just going to continue with these CBG to MIA miles here. Is Coyle, who left the Bengals 4 years ago to become the defensive coordinator for the Dolphins, was fired this year as defensive coordinator on Philbin's staff, part of that purge. So he didn't have a job. So Vance Joseph moves from Bengals DB's coach to Dolphins defensive coordinator, and now Kevin Coyle probably going to come back and take over the DB's coach job. Again, there is some continuity in that as well. So that's the one good thing where they can replace in there a guy who did a great job. And you've never, I believe have you ever met Kevin Coyle before?
I have not. No.
You'll love Kevin Coyle. Kevin Coyle is Mr. Intensity, man. He'll convince you, you know, I want to run through a wall. You'll have you going. But he was somebody who had a large role in the development of Leon Hall and Jonathan Joseph in their younger years. So
yeah.
The Bengals will hope that continues. Okay. So the one aspect is I'm going to segue time. Here we go. Segue time. So the one aspect of all of these coaches in the coaching tree now extending out even further with Hugh Jackson and Mike Zimmer and Jay Gruden and Vance Joseph and all of these pieces out there that are been a part of this reboot team. They know what is going on here. They know these guys and who is good and who is not and what you can handle and what they're doing. Whereas before, I think it was a bit of a secret.
Right.
Is now all of the guys that were core players on this reboot could possibly hit the market. And that's more and more people that understand how good they are and more players that would feel comfortable moving to play for them because they feel like they know a piece of that, whether, like you mentioned, George Iloka playing for Vance Joseph or George Iloka playing for Mike Zimmer, who knew how good he was, or even Hugh Jackson, who spent some time in the DB room when in his first year there. I mean, there is just a lot of guys out there. And so let's go through the list here and let's kind of discuss the majority of these guys. So there's 15 Bengals free agents, okay? And you have 8 of them who were essentially starters. I mean, played the vast majority of snaps this year. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And those are all starters from a 12-4 team that are going to be desirable for that reason. So, as topping my priority list, I start with Marvin Jones. I think there is a possibility to be very thin at receiver if the Bengals aren't careful. And they kind of came. I felt like you came into the year saying Marvin Jones or Mo Sanu. I have to feel like they think right now it sure would be nice to keep both because they didn't get that receiver in the draft that they wanted last year. So, but here's the thing. Talk about the possibility. Do you remember Hugh Jackson on Beyond the Stripes talking when Doc asked him which player more than anyone else in this offense has barely scratched the surface of his abilities, and Jackson snapped off, Marvin Jones, not even close. The guy is so talented. He has so much ability. We haven't even touched how good he can be.
Right.
The Browns have a whole lot of room on the cap, and they sure as hell don't have any receivers.
Right.
And they've got a coach that just said that guy was the one guy that has not scratched the surface, and he's a free agent. And – oh, by the way, as well, you also have Marvin Jones and Andrew Hawkins, who are close friends.
Ah,
from there. I mean, it was when they were in each other's wedding. I remember the AJ Green wedding of everyone posing together. They were all so tight. Still, listen. that is going to be a problem. That is going to be one guy at the very least rising up, bringing up the cost of doing business with Marvin Jones.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that Marvin Jones is a priority. I would shift it down, I guess, a little bit, in that I would say it's George Iloka, because I just look at a number two receiver, but Marvin Jones is the number three target behind Tyler Eifert. And I just think that, look, there's going to be need, and I understand the Bengals draft by need, or not by need, by best position, and who knows who's there at 24 and 48 or whatever it's going to be. I think you can find a number two receiver / number three target in the draft if need be. Safety, especially with Sean Williams, I think George Iloka or Reggie Nelson are gone. If it's me, I'm going with the two young guys who can really solidify that back end, especially, yeah, Drake Kirkpatrick, who kind of struggled a little bit in his transition to being a number one corner. If Adam Jones walks away, you're hoping a rehab Darquez Dennard on the outside. I like, so much of what Paul Gunther likes to do is from the top down. You know, we heard a lot about that. I don't know. I think you can get away with a replacement at wide receiver than kind of rolling the dice on Reggie and Sean. And I don't know. It's 1 and 1A to me. But I definitely agree with you on that end. But here's the other thing. Both of those guys, Paul, as you mentioned, Cleveland might be get way more money than the Bengals are willing to offer either. So, it's, they could be priorities, but you know how the Bengals are. They want their price. They want their guys at their price.
Yeah. They're only going to pay their evaluation. I mean, they're not going to go and dropping all kinds of coin on a guy. They will overpay maybe a little bit for their own guys.
Right.
I mean, they will stretch to keep certain guys. I mean, AJ Green's making a boatload of cash. Geno Atkins got the highest defensive tackle contract around when they signed a new extension. I mean, they overpaid a little bit for Ray Maluga last year. They've done that. They go a little bit above and beyond, but they're not going to go insanely above and beyond.
Right.
I mean, they're going to say, here's what we're willing to pay. If you can go get more power to you.
Right.
Congratulations to you. You beat the system. You know?
Yeah.
That's the way they're going to look at it. It's what they did with Michael Johnson. When Michael Johnson ended up in Tampa Bay.
Right.
Was they said, you know what? Okay. We're not going to pay you $43.5 million. We're just not going to do it. We've gone to the top of what we're going to go to. And I think that's something that could happen here with some of these guys that we're listening to top, whether it be a Jones or whether it be an Iloka, or even going further down to an Adam Jones or Sanu or somebody like that.
Right.
So, I mean, either way, both of these guys we mentioned, Iloka and Jones, there are cheaper, different ways to go about covering for their absence, whether it be, okay, if Marvin Jones doesn't bolts for Cleveland, Mo Sanu is about to get paid by the Bengals.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And in the same respect, if George Iloka bolts for wherever, you better know that they're going to go ahead and give a pretty lucrative one or two year deal to Reggie Nelson to make sure that he comes back to buy them time to fill in for that, and then have Reggie Nelson and Sean
right.
Williams as the starters back there.
Right. No, I agree. And then we can get into this later too, but there's compensatory issues with those two guys, especially at the top end.
Yep.
You know, where Marvin Jones, look, he catches 60 balls for the Bengals. Tyler Eifert's healthy. What's his real ceiling in this offense? It's probably 60 balls, maybe a few more touchdowns, but some other team might think he's a 90 catch guy and pay him on that potential, and same thing with George Iloka. You mentioned Mike Zimmer, you know, Vance Joseph, some other teams that play similar styles where you need that sort of big rangy cover type, safety. But that's interesting, Paul, because you mentioned Mo Sanu is probably like that next guy down the list. Reggie Nelson's a little further based on age and some of the struggles he had in run D, you know, earlier in the year. And down that list, like, yes, technical starters, I get you, but I don't know if there is important. You know what I mean? I just think with draft picks coming in and young guys already on the team that maybe deserve some more time, you know, as we go down that list, I don't know if they're as impactful, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, as those guys.
I do want to bring in a little bit of George Iloka. This is George Iloka from after the game against the Steelers, and you know George will talk to you now. I mean he'll talk to you all day, and if you listen through the lens of a guy who's a free agent and you try to get a feel for how he's leaning, I think it's kind of clear how he's leaning if you just listen to the way he's talking. Talking about, you know, in no uncertain terms, if this is my last year here, it's like, what? You're already kind of counting yourself out, you know? I mean, so anyway, it's a very interesting thing. Anyway, so just here's a little bit of George Iloka from after the game.
Man, this shit crazy. Just being real with you, this don't make no sense. This is my fourth year here. I feel like, man, I'm just lost for it. It's just really disheartening, you know, like, sad for ourselves, for all the fans we let down, man. They've been riding with us since I got here, and year after year we disappoint them. And it's just crazy, just all the talent we have, and we just lose to teams that, personally to me, I don't think that, you know, they match up with us talent-wise, and some way we lose, find a way to lose, or not come out fired up. It's just crazy, and all day we battled. The only thing I can take away from the game that I'm proud of. We battled. It's a different feeling, though. You know, it's a different feeling for us, you know, defense, like in the previous year. We just came out battling and did everything the coaches asked for us and, you know, made plays when we had to, get stops when we had to, even after bad plays, you know, respond, holding the field goals. And it's just disheartening that we couldn't close out, you know, because we work hard, you know, contrary to the popular belief, we really want to win, and it's just, it sucks. You know, you don't know how much time you have in this league. You know, for me, this is my last year in terms of my contract. You know, I don't know what's gonna happen, but you know, why wait till next year? Like, this was it. Like, for me, that's how I was looking at it. Like, not too many times we ever play on a team this loaded, this stacked, and just came up short 4 years in a row. It's just terrible.
The atmosphere was obviously emotional the whole game. I mean, lots of back. How hard was it to try to contain a lot of that? Because there was so much of, especially once it got to the end, you know.
Hard.
Contain emotions and try to keep from getting into that stuff because there was so much of it going on and a lot of.
For me, it's easy. I mean, I'm even kill. You know, only time I get riled up is when I hit somebody. Mm-hmm. I get excited and calm back down for the next play. Gotta ask everybody how they handle things. I'm pretty even keel for the most part. You know, I try to play within the rules, and you know, I learned firsthand. You know, people can't really hurt you in terms of in football. They can't hurt you if they push you later, if they punch you. You know, I punched the guy my second year here. They ain't hurt him. You know, can't nobody hurt you with these pads on and this helmet. So I kind of, you know, sometimes I just put my pride to the side and tell the ref, watch out for whoever, and just get ready for the next play. But it's an emotional game. But we came out and we came out real intense, and it's crazy.
Mindset.
I feel like this is last year. I'm having the same talk last year about. I don't know what to say. It's 4 years in a row. You think I'll be good at this? But every year you're still shocked, like, because I really felt like we should have won, but we didn't. So. Mm-hmm.
Where do you see the team? I mean, you said 4 years you've seen this. How does this one? I know that bitter taste every year, but this, like you said, this one seemed it was there.
You lose to a team that is not better than you, it just hurts, and especially hurts for me this year because I don't know what my future holds in terms of this organization. So, I mean, I've been with these are my brothers, and I've been training, sweating, shedding blood with them, and I just wish, you know. This is my last year here that on my way out, you know, we can make history for this organization. We came up short, you know.
Okay, so there's George Iloka talking a little bit about his free. So let's move it down the list a little bit. We've touched on sort of the Iloka, Nelson, Jones, Sanu factor. If they sign George Iloka, Reggie Nelson will walk, and vice versa. And if they sign Marvin Jones, I think there's still hope that they could get Mohamed Sanu to agree. But I wonder if Mohamed Sanu would want to go somewhere where he could be featured more prominently.
Right.
If you know you're just going to be the fourth option again in Cincinnati and them kind of evaluating you that way. I mean, this guy has shown the year when in 2014, I mean, he had a lot of drops, but he also had a lot of spectacular catches and made a lot of spectacular plays for that team when he was essentially acting as the number one receiver for the first half of the season. I mean, there was a lot of people arguing the first half of that season that Mohamed Sanu should have been team MVP for that first half. And, if you're him, you're sitting there saying, man, I sure would like to feel like I'm treated that way. And so we'll see how that plays out.
Right.
Let's move down. So Adam Jones, here we go. Adam Jones cost himself some cash, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Hey, there's really no way around it. I mean, when you – he went from this guy – and maybe teams will see through this. And maybe we talked about guys like Vance Joseph and Mike Zimmer and that will see through what happened at the end of this game. But when you're already kind of like a crazy person in the eyes of a lot of coaches – and then you have a play like that happen. It washes away what you did to be one of the best corners in football. Because teams, particularly in free agents, are not looking to bring somebody in who's going to cause that kind of an issue on a big stage and be that kind of an influence.
Right. I mean, before the season, we wondered about his age. He'll be 33 next September. Legs are a little younger, obviously, with some of his time away from the game. He did battle a foot injury. I don't think anyone ever doubted he was a tough guy on the field in terms of being able to fight through things physically and still produce. I mean, he's looking at a short, and he admitted this. He told us, and we'll hear, you know, he knows this is it. You know, his window to make money and make back a lot of the money he's lost that he still needs to pay out in some areas is now.
He's got bills.
Yeah,
he's got pills.
And the Amari Cooper, the Amari Cooper thing back in week one, honestly, people kind of forgot about it. I mean, it was a big firestorm for those 2 days after, you know, during and after, but he played so well, you know, to the point where when the Pro Bowl thing was, you know, rosters were announced, I mean, everyone went running to him about him being snubbed. So, because he did turn in that type of season. So, but you're right, though, when you melt down like that in the look, if that penalty gets called in the first half, I don't think anybody even remembers that it happened.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But it was like the one moment for the one guy in the one action that it couldn't have been. So yeah, I'm real curious about that, and I think honestly, the Bengals, I'm sure, would love to have him back, but they just may just sit and wait and be like, you know, because I think Adam will take the most money with regardless, and I think the Bengals would just wait to see, you know, if that money exists, and if not, then they'll say, here's what we got.
Yeah, to me, I think what happened at the end of this game, incredibly, probably from a lot of fans' perspective, cinched his return here. Because I just don't think many people are going to want to bring that in, and I think it also probably brought his number down to something that the Bengals would absolutely be comfortable with.
Right.
Or maybe his years down to something they'd be more comfortable with. I mean, he's 32. He's 9 seasons in. We talk a lot about how he doesn't have the full tread on his tires because, you know, he missed a few of those seasons with suspensions and injuries and such. So, but still, he's still 32.
Right.
You know, you'd be hesitant to give him. It would certainly be a front loaded deal where they could get out of it later if they had to. But to me, I would be shocked if he wasn't back in Cincinnati. Cincinnati's been good to him. He wants to stay here. The Bengals want him to stay here. He, believe it or not, is incredibly important to that locker room. And so I think he eventually stays. I mean, in my story with free agents, I have it as one of the highest percentage chances of return. I think that he's one of those they definitely find a way to work something out on. Let's keep going down the list. Vinny Ray, or no, you know what? Before people love hearing from Adam. They dislike him. I do want to bring him. We have Adam kind of talking about his whole situation and some other reaction to. I mean, it, and he had. I don't know if any of our listeners have seen it, But Brandon Marshall sat down with him on Showtime. It's actually on YouTube. You can just go look at it for their Inside the NFL show. And it was about a 20-minute conversation. Honest, insightful, interesting. And I think Adam really tells his side of the story very calmly and I think comes off as a bit more rational, as we often see him do. I mean, we've talked to him on – every time we had him on Beyond the Stripes, we talk about how great he is in that setting. And this was sort of another one like that. I recommend watching that if you get a chance. But outside of that, here's some of Adam Jones talking to him on Clean Out Day about his future and some other stuff. So anyway, here's Adam Jones.
I think we had a great – a good season. Play here, play there, short from succeeding to the next round.
Yeah. You, I mean, it was a big fear for you individually, too. I mean, what, I don't know if you've had time to digest all that in 24 hours, but just your thoughts on the season you were able to put together.
It's been good, man. I didn't realize today of how good of a game I played, you know. It's hard to come into a game, more or less an NFL game, and a playoff game, and only giving up one catch, so, just speak volume of how much work I've put in and taking the coaching and understanding different techniques that VJ have taught me, understanding the defense, understanding what Polly is trying to get the defense to look like. But it was good, man.
Is there, I mean, just your thoughts on, I mean, now you're in the market, right? So, I mean, just your thoughts, expectations about this process now?
We'll see how it goes.
I know this will go in the Senate.
I truly love it here in Cincinnati and want to be here. And Mr. the Browns have done a lot for me and my family. Coach Lewis also. I'm a pretty loyal person when it comes to stuff like that. But I got to take care of my family first and foremost. So you
do, I mean, you kind of owe it to yourself to at least see what's out there.
Oh, right, yeah. At this point, yeah. Not only myself, you know, my family. Yeah. First defensive player pick. Had everything took from me. Came here, was the fourth corner. Worked my ass off every day and got my starting position back and played at an elite level as a top five corner. So I owe that to at least my family and myself. So we'll see how it goes.
Because of Marvin giving you that opportunity too, and the way that you and your family have kind of come up these last 5-6 years here, I mean, does that maybe mean more to you about wanting to stay too? Just given the way that the last few years have gone here?
Well,
if it works out that way, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, if things are right, I'll stay here. If not, I have to do what I have to do. My family still have, I still have to take care of my family. And the window of contracts is only so small, you know, so I'll be smart and wise of wherever the decision is and wherever I go, but of course I want to be here.
You obviously talked to two different people about the other night. Still standing true to what you think happened.
Oh, yeah. Learned a lot out of this game, actually, but I still stand that he has no reason to be on the field. Coaches are supposed to be held to a high standard when it comes to stuff like that. Even with Mike Munchak grabbing Reggie Hare, thank God that wasn't me, because I wouldn't have just walked away. And in the heat of the moment, I don't think. But I just think coaches are held to high standards. It's period, point blank. If I was, let's just say, one of their kids come over on our side and I snatch them down by the hair, I'm quite sure I'm get kicked out of the game. We fined over $200,000. And I think coaches should be held to a high standard, period, point blank.
All right, so now moving on down the list here. I think we go to – you get into these middle-of-the-pack guys, sort of role-player guys.
Right.
A little bit. And so if on my priority list anyway, Vinny Ray would be a top priority for me, but I think it's one that's definitely going to get done. Vinny Ray wants to be – in Cincinnati. He loves Cincinnati. Cincinnati loves him. I keep going back to Darren Simmons telling me if we had 53 Vinny Rays, we'd win the Super Bowl.
Right.
He's been an invaluable role player. He's still in his prime. He's only 28. You know, if you have any injuries, you have any need on special teams, you have anything anywhere, you need somebody to help out, Vinny Ray is there and doing it well and being an example of how it should be played. So I would say it's that to me that he's like one, maybe the no-brainer of the free agent season to be back.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was exposed a little bit in the starting role, you know, being asked to sort of do some things, you know, in absence of Ray Maluga at times, in absence of Vontaze Burfict. But you're right, though, Paul. He's a core guy, good guy, you know, leader. And you're right, upon injury, can play multiple positions, core guy in special teams. Yeah, without a doubt, I think, is, you know, those guys are valuable, but also inherently replaceable. So I don't think he's a guy that's going to command a lot of dollars elsewhere. You know, so I think he fits this team, and you're right. I would put him at a real high chance coming back.
Let me throw a name out there and just let you respond to what you think, because I'm curious. I don't think we've talked too much about this guy in particular in regards to whether he comes back or not. Wallace Gilberry.
That's to me, I think when you factor in the age and who's waiting in the wings. And I'm specifically thinking, you know, on some level, Will Clark and Margus Hunt, who's still on the roster. So that's what we can go by at this point. Talking about Marcus Hardison,
yep,
who flashed a lot in the preseason. You're talking about Deshaun Williams, who currently is on the 53-man roster. You know, Brandon Thompson's got a ways back now from a pretty serious knee injury. He's a fun dude to be around. I like him, Paul, but you see where I'm going with this. I just think that at some point, things got to turn over. I mean, Domantas Pekka's got 1 year left on his deal. He's another year older. You know, it's maybe time to open up some of those rotational snaps for a line that could be 10 deep again next year. You know what I mean? Good dude, and I would venture on the side of youth and getting some snaps so you can make some judgments, especially on, you know, Margus Hunt, you know, maybe filling in, and Will Clark when Wallace would be on the outside in his rotation, and then Marcus Hardison, Deshaun Williams on the inside when Wallace moved in there. So I just think there's too many younger options who need those snaps, my opinion.
I agree. I would agree with you in that. And an underrated element of this, and an underrated participant in the shenanigans of the final seconds, yes, was Wallace Gilberry. Wallace Gilberry comes up from behind and bumps Joey Porter. And during a number of these instances, he found himself in the middle of things and was one of those guys who kind of was pushing that line a little bit, a lot. And you wonder how much Wallace Gilberry coming up and pushing Joey Porter in the back had to do with that flag not coming against Joey Porter.
Right.
And things like that. I'm just, Wallace is, on a whole, has been a pretty good guy here. I mean, without a doubt. But I find his case interesting. His cap number last year was $2.1 million. You have guys on rookie contracts that are going to come much cheaper that you like to think you want to develop to be able to do what he can do. Marcus Hardison was drafted as a Gilberry clone, a guy that plays tackle, he plays end, he does a little bit of both, a rotational type guy, and he played well. They liked what he showed in the preseason. He just never was really able to break off the inactive roster. Whether he's going to come out and instantly produce like Gilberry, who knows, but he's a younger, cheaper version that maybe could produce like Gilberry, or, you know, but like you mentioned, there's a lot of other guys there. To me, it's one of those that I put a very reasonable offer out, but nothing huge. And if Gilberry feels like he wants to go anywhere, go somewhere else, or sees another spot or can get more money, more power to him.
Yeah. And just finally on that end, I think here's the thing too. Into this year, right, from 14 to 15, you know, maybe there was still some question, the Bengals, is Geno going to be Geno again?
Yep.
You know, 14 was so disappointing. Well, now you know Geno's back. He's healthy. So I'm not saying Wallace Gilberry was an insurance policy, you know, and carrying these 10 guys. you know, we'll get into Pat Sims here in a little bit too, and some of these guys. But now that you know what Geno is, and you put him next to Marcus Hardison or William or, you know, some of these other guys, you know what Carlos Dunlap takes is a huge leap forward. Michael Johnson, you know, 5 sacks, his highest total since that double digit year a few years ago. You know, I think you can roll the dice, I guess, if you will, a little bit with putting that younger guy, these more unproven, if you will, guys, because frankly, you have an all pro in the middle, a pro bowler on the end now. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's kind of like the offensive line with Russell Bodine. Like, somebody has to produce and not get paid. And Marcus Hardison, frankly, is younger. Those guys are younger and cheaper than an aging Wallace Gilberry, even though his cap number is very low. So I guess that's where I'm at on that one, you know.
So Brandon Thompson and Pat Sims seem to be kind of a one-off, but with Brandon Thompson having torn his ACL, I mean, his 2016 season is a lot of it's in jeopardy.
Right.
So you would think that probably brings Pat Sims as the guy that they would want to bring. I mean, Pat Sims played for cheap. They got him on the cheap last year. I mean, and he played well, and when he had opportunities to play, he was only active about half the games. But
yeah.
I think you'd want to bring Pat Sims back. And I know that you got a couple of fans of Pat Sims here coming back. We love Pat Sims. Pat Sims offered me offered you maybe one of my favorite quotes all year. This past week when you asked him about free agency. So I just want to bring in a small bit of Pat Sims talking about his situation and what that means. Here's a little bit of big man, all 330 pounds of Pat Sims.
What's your thoughts on the season? I mean, you guys had such a strong rotation, and I know your spots when it was your time to be up. I mean, we saw 92, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I just appreciate the opportunity, you know what I'm saying? And we had a pretty good year and just didn't end how we would hope it would end. But, you know, that's why you come back next year and you start getting prepared for the next year.
Right. How do you feel about your situation? Kind of what do you – any inclinations or
– My situation is my situation. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a free agent, and, you know what I'm saying, if they want me back, they'll get me back. I mean, if I got to go somewhere else, I got to go somewhere else. But at the end of the day – I gotta work.
Right. Because you've been through this before.
Yeah,
so I mean, especially with this front office group. So any surprises, you kind of just know how, I mean.
I mean, at the end of the day, when I get that phone call, that's when I know. Other than that, I'm not worried about it. I can't sit here and be waiting for a phone call, hoping and stuff. I just let it happen.
Right.
Hey, gotta work.
Yep.
You gotta work, you know. As only Pat Sims can say it, you know. It's just great. So I think there's a pretty good chance he ends up working in Cincinnati again next year. I think I think both sides enjoyed what they got from each other. The Bengals getting a good solid back end rotational guy, and Pat Sims getting a paycheck.
Right. No, exactly right. And look, he was again when you talk about veterans and sort of excelling in a rotation, you know, I think Wallace played okay, you know, this year in that role. I think Pat Sims looked great against Denver. He made a lot of, he was impactful in my opinion against Pittsburgh. So I think, you know, if you're going to carry 9-10 D lineman again, he's a guy, you know, good locker room guy, you know, took Deshaun Williams and Marcus Hardison under his wing a little bit. And you know, they kind of know what they have, and so, yeah, he fits the mold for me as a guy. Hey, throw this out there. I mean, he clearly will look for work. He will take his money somewhere.
No doubt.
But you're right with the Brandon Thompson thing. And I don't mean to skip over your list here, but, you know, with Thompson and Emmanuel Lemur, who, you know, E-Man really wouldn't get into what his injury was, but he left on crutches, still in a full leg brace. You know, I'm curious, Paul, you know the history a little bit more than I do here going into some of these things. But, like, I don't know the market for damaged goods, for unproven players, or maybe, like, in a sense of Emmanuel Lemur, maybe underachieving in a way, considering his body of work. Are these guys who the Bengals could offer, you know, minimum deals for their age and experience and then sort of PUP them and see what happens? And, you know, that type of thing where, you know, they keep the guys they like and they know, and, you know, the money kind of works, and, you know, maybe in week 6, 7, 8, whenever it is, you know, you got some familiar guys, which we know Paul, you know, Paul Gunther, Marvin like to have. I don't know. I to me, I kind of loop those guys into the same boat a little bit, you know.
No, I'm with you on that. I think that, I mean, if you're a guy coming off an ACL injury, I hate to break it to you, it's unfortunate, but you're not going to get what you want on the market. Right. And you should want to take a 1-year deal and then just move forward and get whatever you can. And kind of consider a dead year and try to hit free agency again. So I think it wouldn't be shocking to see something like that. Both those guys get in rehab here, all that kind of stuff. Let's keep moving here. Leon Hall, I think we all come to terms with the fact that it's over for him in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You know, Leon had 9 great seasons. He played this year with a herniated disc in his back. Warrior, I mean, just playing through it because he knew it was probably his last opportunity. You know, 2 Achilles clearly slowed him down. Teams were picking on him, but he still was out there and playing his butt off, you know, just scrapping and off of, you know, just savvy out there in the nickel corner slot. But I mean, they let him complete his contract. His cap number was $9.6 million last year. You know, he would either have to come back all the way down. I mean, who knows if Leon is even going to want to continue to play after what he went through this year. We'll see. I think it's pretty clear that it's over for him in Cincinnati.
I agree.
The same for Eric Winston, who was inactive 3 of the last 4 games. Brandon Tate, it could be the end for him if they ever would. We've said this before, though. If they don't get another receiver in the draft or figure that out, there's a chance that Brandon Tate returns, I guess. There always is. But it feels like it should be time. He was 22nd out of 24 players in average yards per punt return, and he only caught 2 passes all year. Although one of them was a 55-yard touchdown pass, but still only caught 2 touchdown passes.
Yeah, you got Mario Alford waiting in the wings, already on the roster. James Wright will be back. And then, of course, anybody they may draft.
Yeah, so I think that – I think that probably could be the end. I know Bengals fans are probably happy about that. Last guy to really get to would be Andre Smith. And I think another writing was on the wall moment. I sort of talked to Andre on his way out on Monday. He wasn't really interested in talking. And judging by his interactions, he basically told me when I asked him, so are we going to talk again? Talking to any guy soon? And he just kind of said, yeah, maybe, maybe not. And I think, and he's going to be good. There's a lot of bad offensive linemen that are playing in this league, and Andre will go somewhere and start and get handed some money to do so. In a place where they just spent their top 2 picks on offensive linemen at the tackle position, it ain't going to be here.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, again, BBP listeners, forgive me a little bit for not being up to speed on all my compensatory type stuff. But Andre Smith, in the end, we talk about Marvin Jones, talk about George Iloka. Andre Smith might be the guy who walks out of Cincinnati with the largest chunk of change. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, he's in his late 20s. He's proven experience. And for all of the issues that we know, look, that's not in town, right? That is not, you know, there's coaches out there who are going to look at that line and look at some things and say, hey, that's a guy who can anchor our right side for the next 5-6 years. And he could end up, you know, I mean, could be wrong, but all it takes is one, right, Paul? So,
Marshall Newhouse somehow was starting for the Giants last year. And Marshall Newhouse was a far backup to Andre Smith.
Right.
So take that into consideration, what else is going on out there in the league. That's a pretty good nutshell roundup where we're at. Of course, you can see the full list and breakdown of everybody on Cincinnati.com. That is out there. Pick up your Inquirer. Make sure you get that. Hopefully you know you got that Bengals app. I hope you got the Bengals app. If you don't, you are missing out, because especially during the offseason where stuff isn't as regular, you're not always checking up to the Bengals page and stuff like that. Boom, we'll push alert you to let you know anytime anything's happening during the offseason, so you never feel left behind. We don't want you to feel left out. We want you to feel like you're on the side. So we got that for you. And we'll continue to bring you more BBPs as we keep going. There's plenty to react to. We're going to have our end-of-season awards coming up this weekend. So lots of good stuff there. What else we got? They're still going to fill these coaching positions, so we'll be following all that for you. Still plenty more to talk about. We're on the way out of the season into the off-season. It feels good. It feels kind of good.
Yeah, it was good. Definitely good to slow down just a little bit.
We're trying to until they speed us back up. So anyway, Make sure you keep it locked here. And so I guess, you know, it feels like considering we spent all this time talking about people leaving, who's going to come, all these free agents, are they going to leave? Are they going to stay? Should I stay or should I go? I mean, I feel like that's a pretty good song to go out on, right?
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
I like it. I'm glad you're in full support of it. We went with the very sad Bowie earlier
right.
this week. It was fairly depressing, I think, for the BBP people. We're going to cheer you up slightly. So hopefully that works for you. Anyway, we'll be catching with you again soon. Make sure you check back in, and we'll talk to you next time on the BBP.
Darling, you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next it's black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now?